You are listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM, listener-supported community radio.
On the next episode of NeuroEmergent, I talk with Leah Blankenship, founder of the Neurodiversity Alliance at the University of Oregon. Go Ducks!
One thing I hear from so many of my ADHD students all the time is like, if I hear one more person tell me to buy a planner, I'm just going to lose my mind because it just doesn't work.
I'm your host, Carrie Stewart Lingle. Join us at 11 a.m. Wednesday, August 27th for a conversation about neurodiversity from a Gen Z perspective.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Good evening, and welcome to Labor Radio. Of the working class, by the working class, for the working class. I'm your host, Stephen Siegel, here with co-host Rachel Haynes. Hi, Rachel.
Hi.
We are broadcasting around the world from Portland, Oregon. Both of us are public school teachers, and we host every second Monday of the month where we typically interview educators and talk about what's going on in their schools and in their unions. And joining us today is Rachel and myself. Woohoo!
Hey.
And Rachel is going to be talking to me and asking me about the NEA Representative Assembly that just happened a few weeks ago here in Portland.
Yeah, so I am going to be talking to you about the NEA, or National Education Association Representative Assembly. So this is an annual gathering of educators in NEA-affiliated unions from across the country. Why don't you start by telling us a little bit about the RA itself? What are some of the things that happen in addition to the official business of the RA?
Yeah, so the Representative Assembly, or RA as we call it, happens once a year. It lasts for 4 full days of business, and plus there are always lots of pre-conferences and just sort of getting everybody up to speed and ready to get down to business. So it's actually more like a week, but 4 days of official business, and it alternates cities. And this year we were lucky to have it here and host it here in Portland. And the NEA RAs are a place for where delegates come from all over the country. We have the NEA has affiliates, I believe, in all 50 states plus Puerto Rico, and we have a federal affiliate, so because we have some schools in Europe and other places. So it's about 6,000 to 7,000 delegates coming together all in one space, and different motions are made and debates are had on our bylaws, on resolutions, which are our sort of core belief statements, on our legislative objectives. I might be leaving out a couple. And then I would say the main one where delegates engage with it are called new business items, or NBIs as we call them. New business items are typically 1-year proposals that are made, and then we debate. And if they pass, then NEA has to devote some time and resources to whatever the motion called for.
Great. And what was it like to have it in Portland?
It was really interesting. You know, I've been to a few, and it's different when it's in your own city. You know, I'll tell you, one of the things that was really nice was most of the cities where I've gone to for the RA, it's really hot and humid. Because a lot of the country is hot and humid during the summertime. And so to have this beautiful sort of, you know, high 70s, low 80s, not that humid, was fantastic. You know, as far as how it was for me as a delegate, It was a little, there was maybe a little bit less camaraderie or sort of that sort of we're all here together team atmosphere from the Oregon delegation, because there were people that were going home afterwards. Only some people were staying in the hotels. So a lot of people were going home and still had their regular personal lives going on mm-hmm. during the RA versus, you know, when we travel as a delegation to another city, that's all we're doing is NEA stuff. And so felt like we maybe weren't quite as tight knit as we normally are. And then the last thing I'll say is, I think, you know, we take some pride in Portland. There are a lot of great things about Portland and about Oregon, as far as just, you know, the great, you know, I mean, I mentioned the weather, but just the great outdoors things to go and see. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, there was some pride in hosting it here in Portland.
Nice. So you are a part of a group called Educators for Palestine. Can you tell us a little bit about the group and when it formed?
Yeah, sure. So I will say that the first RA that I went to, I think, which was about maybe 8 years ago, somebody went and spoke at the mic. And she was really a very powerful, dynamic speaker, and was speaking about, I can't even remember the details at all, but it had something to do with Palestine. And I thought, wow, she's a powerful speaker. I want to get to know her. And I went over and introduced myself and kind of stayed connected with her, but didn't do any sort of more organizing around that until there was a virtual RA. So this was during sort of the peak of COVID, before we were ready to come back to being in person. And there was a Palestinian woman, a teacher, who had a proposal, and we ended up not having time to even get to it because she had submitted it a little bit on the later side, and we didn't get to finish all of them. But I did reach out to her and started making some connections with really just a handful of other educators who were interested in trying to get something passed, really just to get NEA to acknowledge that, you know, Palestinians are part of our community and we have Palestinian students and Palestinian leaders, and yet they're...
Looks like we have a little freeze going on.
Oppression going on, you know, back home for them, or in, you know, in Palestine. I'm sorry, did I cut out?
Just for a second, but I think we got most of what you were saying, was just this acknowledgement of Palestinian educators and students and families, and that they are suffering oppression and discrimination in their homeland, and that we should acknowledge that as an organization. Did I get that right?
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. You got it. And there was a time where, from what I understand, somebody used the word Palestine and was told that they were out of order for talking about Palestine. So we have really come a long ways. We started meetings and organizing and deciding what we want to do at the RAs. Really, it was just 3 years ago. It was just a couple of years before, you know, sort of the current genocide really started happening. Of course, once that happened, that really generated a lot more interest, and a lot more folks were interested in organizing and joining with us. But we started out a very, very small group that was just interested in educating NEA members about Palestine. And because, frankly, I heard stories that teachers were telling students, if they asked about Palestine, that it wasn't a real place.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously our teachers need to be educated. And that's kind of where we started. We didn't start out trying to pass anything that we thought was very controversial, although anything, just like I said, even just mentioning Palestine becomes controversial to some people?
So what were some of the things that you wanted to accomplish during this NEARA?
Yeah, so first of all, beyond any sort of motions that we wanted to bring, at the previous RA, we had decided, let's do something more. Let's hold a rally and a march. And we were in Philadelphia, and that RA only lasted for one day. I won't get into why that happened, but we decided let's organize with the local folks in Philadelphia and put on a rally and a march around Palestine. And we did that, and we felt like that was pretty powerful and successful. And, you know, it was an opportunity for us to really get to know folks in the Philadelphia area and organize with some really cool people there, and to do something beyond just inside the RA passing motion. So we did that, and we decided let's do something like that again this year. So this year we held a vigil, but I want to say that it was different this year because we also wanted to broaden our message, because the Fight for Palestine is really a sort of an intersectional sort of movement for justice that is beyond just about Palestine. And so we had speakers talk about their experience being from the LGBTQ plus community and what that's like right now with some of the current attacks from the Trump administration and DEI on DEI and all of that. And we also had speakers come and talk about their experience being from the immigrant community, or having that be a part of their past, and what that's like for them now. So we put on that vigil. It was a really powerful event right outside the convention center. And then we had three NBIs that we decided we were going to bring to the RA. One was on the history of boycotts. Obviously, that's a really powerful tactic, and we want people to be aware of it and understand that NEA has some history there as far as boycotting goes. Number two, we had an NBI on academic freedom and understanding the resources that NEA has to offer educators who are under attack, having their free speech rights attacked. And then the last one, the one I think we'll end up talking about, the most controversial one, was about the Anti-Defamation League, the ADL, and our call for NEA to not use their materials, basically to not endorse them, to not use their professional development opportunities. And so that's what we went to this NEARA set out to try to accomplish.
Yes. Yeah, so the NBI about the ADL got a lot of press. I was seeing it in the news and in social media. So can you start by giving a little background on the ADL and why Educators for Palestine specifically focused on that organization?
Yeah, well, that organization has been around for a long time. I can't remember when they started, but I think it was maybe the 1930s or 40s. They go quite a ways back. And they've had problems historically with some of the things that the positions that they've taken, but I believe that they really did set out to be a voice against anti-Semitism and to be a resource for folks who were experiencing anti-Semitism. The problem now is that, like other pro-Israel lobbying groups, they have adopted that definition of anti-Semitism as including any sort of criticism of Israel. And so if you look at their resources, their resources will ignore the historical context and racism against Palestinians, and they won't mention anything about settler colonialism, and there's no questioning of the Israeli narrative that that Israel is a, you know, or was a land without people, for a people without a land. It was not a land without people, right? And then the other problem with the ADL is not only are their resources problematic, but they are taking an active role in going after educators, right? So they are actually being anti-union, anti-teacher. They are pressuring school boards to take action against teachers that they define as being anti-Semitic, simply because the teachers wanting to teach about Palestine or the Nakba or mention settler colonialism or Zionism. And there are these things called Title VI complaints. I don't know what all Title VI encompasses, but they're filing these complaints calling for the suspension or expulsion of students. So we're talking about, you know, primarily college students, and then also educators. So they are not a good social justice partner. And we believe that NEA's core values don't fit with theirs, and that we should not be using or promoting their resources.
I'd also like to mention some of the rather confusing sort of apologist stances on things like Elon Musk's, you know, Hitler salute. There was, you know, some sort of like, oh, well, we don't think he really meant it. It's like, if you're taking a position against anti-Semitism, it should really be pretty solidly applied to everyone, right?
Right. Yeah. They're actually in some ways sort of, you know, aligning themselves with fascists, right? I mean, that is one of the practices of a fascist, is to try to shut down any sort of, you know, academic freedom and teaching, you know, teaching the truth, in a sense. So they're aligning themselves with the far right.
So what was this debate like on the floor, this NBI? Was it?
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Was it contentious, or did it pass rather easily?
No, it was contentious. There were several of us that had an opportunity to speak in favor and against, and
he froze.
And when the vote was called, and that was close to call for the chair, so the chair called for a sort of visible vote where people hold up a piece of paper. So, you know, all those in favor, everyone who's in favor holds up paper, all those against. And the chair actually had us do that a second time because it was that close. So it was a close vote. And when she ruled that that it had passed, we were pretty elated.
And so thinking about this vote that passed versus in the past, even mentioning the word Palestine got a out of order call from the chair or whatever. So how do you feel like, do you see a noticeable shift in people's sort of understanding and perception about both the plight of Palestinians and about sort of being able to critically look at Israeli policy and politics?
Yeah, I think I was really surprised about how much social media and press coverage. This particular NBI vote got both after it was voted for, and I'm assuming you're going to ask me about what happened afterwards. Both of those actions generated a lot of press, and I think that's great. I think that the more coverage we can get for this, the better. And even though the NEA leadership ended up reversing what we had voted for, I feel like it was actually a historic win for NEA, because now members are aware, right? And they can make their own decisions, but at least now, I think a lot of educators who didn't know anything about the ADL before, now, at least when it comes up, they can do a little more research. They might be a little more curious to look into the resources instead of just using them because somebody gave them the resources. So, I don't know if you want to ask me about that process that happened afterwards with NEA leadership, but
I do.
It's
the next question. So you kind of jumped ahead a little. Why don't you tell us about the actions of the NEA leadership in regard to the vote?
Yeah, so NEA has some rather undemocratic standing rules, specifically for boycotts.
You froze a little bit, so could you... You just said the NEA has some rather...
Yeah, they have some undemocratic standing rules, specifically around boycotts, and which allows anything that is passed at the RA, which normally the RA is supposed to be the highest body, and anything that we pass, that's it. It's a done deal. Mm-hmm. But they have this undemocratic standing rule that says that if it's a boycott, it has to go through the executive committee. The executive committee will then make a recommendation to the board, which is, you know, like about 175 people versus 7,000 at the RA. And the board can either vote on it or they can turn it back over to the RA. I'm assuming it would be the following year RA. I'm not sure of that. So with that written into our standing rules, they were able to subvert the will of the RA, because the executive committee decided that they were against the idea. And I can tell you some of my theories about why, but they decided they were against it, and therefore they went to the board and said, hey, we're against this. You know, I wasn't there. You know, they were in executive session, so nobody knows exactly what was said except if they were there. But the board was told why it was a bad idea, and then there was a vote, and the board voted to not follow through with the boycott, which, by the way, we never called it a boycott. We didn't really think it was a boycott, but it was determined by NEA that it was a boycott.
So what was the specific language in the NBI about?
Well, the NBI was, we won't use or promote or endorse their materials. But, you know, we don't use and endorse and promote, lots of organizations' materials. Mm-hmm. But I don't think we're boycotting them all.
So what are some next steps for Educators for Palestine, and how can people be involved if they want to get involved?
Yeah. We're not sure exactly what our next steps are going to be. I mean, we've been trying to do a lot of media
You've been
us to get our side of the story out there. I think we do need
you have
to first look at revising the standing rule so that this kind of thing can't. I'm not sure how much I'm cutting out. I'm sorry, my internet is unstable. So some of it is just about changing that standing rule. But obviously what's happening right now in Palestine is horrific. And I think a lot of us are ready to up the ante a bit in terms of what else can NEA do? How else can we weigh in and put pressure on our own government to stop supporting the genocide that's happening? We have to keep speaking out, obviously. So we'll continue to do that. But we might bring an NBI around the BDS, around boycott, divest, and sanctions, because I think it's time for us to get behind that and support that call from Palestinian workers, right? Mm-hmm. And beyond that, I don't know. I mean, it's just really looking pretty bad right now. And I think, as far as what listeners can do, support teachers. If you're not an educator, support us in being able to teach the truth, and not in a way that just sort of, tells it one way, but gets students to question, gets students to do research, and focus on the truths, even when they're uncomfortable, right? Sometimes truths are uncomfortable. They make us feel guilty. They make us feel bad about our past or something that we're doing. For listeners, I would say, if you have kids in school, reach out to your kid's teacher at some point and say, hey, I support you in teaching the truth, even when the truth is ugly.
Well, that's a wonderful note to end on. I want to thank you, Stephen, for the interview today about the RA. And thank you to Jamie Partridge for helping us convert this to a radio-ready file. Thank you, audience, for tuning in tonight. Thanks, Stephen, again. And this is Rachel Haynes. You've been listening to Labor Radio. Tune in next Monday and every Monday at 6 p.m.
KBOO Portland, Full Strength Community Radio. This is Kabaka Pyramid representing from Kingston, Jamaica. Baby Rock family, you don't know.
Support for KBOO comes from our members and from Nutrition Inside, presenting the Nutrition Inside Benefit Show, Saturday, August 16th from 4.